Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
On through here, you can travel realms uncharted, break the chains, blur the lines, and open your mind to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and with me is my co-host Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. And you don't have to, hold on just a moment. I can't talk and type. Give me just a moment. All right. So you don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that tonight is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, and because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Hello.
How's it going?
All right. What's doing?
Well, I'm having a little problems with the studio. I don't know why, but I wasn't. It just got stuck in spinning mode. I could not get you out of the green room. So thankfully, you know, Gina's in the background and, you know, she managed to grab you out. But I unfortunately cannot talk and type at the same time, so I basically just had to tell people to hold on while I typed a message because I just am not capable of talking and typing at the same time. But other than that, you know, things are going good. We have a great lineup of poetry tonight, 2 different prompts. Well, One is a piece of artwork from Dolly called Barbarous Nights, and the other is a quote from Salvador Dali, which is a quote about wine. And let's see here. Requirements of great wine. And great wine requires a madman to grow the vine, a wise man to watch over it, a lucid poet to make it, and a lover to drink it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was good to see how that people were inspired by both of those prompts. you know, like I said, looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. And all right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try to bring Lawrence on. And I know Jean's listening in. So if I can't bring him on, then I know she will. So here we go. Ah, look at that. It worked. Awesome. Awesome. Hello, Laurent.
Hello, guys. I know of a few really cheap, almost barbarous wines that will get you to the point where you are inspired. What kind of inspired? Well, you know. And, yes, you have to be knowledgeable enough to convey the wine from the glass to your mouth without spilling all of it. So, yeah, that qualifies.
Well, there you go. There you go. Like Mad Dog 2020.
Oh, God.
What kind of a substance is that?
What is Mad Dog 2020?
Yeah, is that a wine? Does it pretend to be a wine gasoline for a car?
I don't know what, it was really popular back in the, 80s and 90s, and it was basically, it was what you bought when you couldn't afford real wine and you wanted to get drunk. Like, you get a big bottle for, $3, and it hits hard.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. It was the drink of drinking champions at age 18 to 25.
Many a wine-soaked poem was inspired, no doubt.
Yes, yes. you can hear poor Rex just shivering with disgust at the idea of it. It's nasty stuff. But you
moaning
in
remembrance, was it?
Yeah. Are you? Shivering in remembrance of Mad Dog 2020 there, Rex?
Nasty stuff.
Yep, yep.
Well, you can deglaze a pan with it, can't you?
Well, thankfully, at the time that I was hitting the liquor stores at 17, something new had just came out. Boone's Farm Wines. You can pick those up for 99 cents. And it was a hell of a lot better than Mad Dog 2020.
They had an apple wine, I think, that I liked.
Yes, and Strawberry Hill.
Mm-hmm. Are they still around?
I don't know. But I've gone back 50 years now. So.
Well, that's all.
You know
that's
what?
Just yesterday it was. That's all.
I think it is actually still around. I actually the wine I like, and of course I'm not a connoisseur or really picky about it, is the brand Yellowtail. It's an Australian wine that's mid-price.
Yellowtail's good.
It is.
Their Shiraz is good.
My wife drinks wine in a box.
Boone's Farm does still exist. They've still got Strawberry Hill. They've got Boone's Farm Strawberry Daiquiri, Boone's Farm Blue Hawaiian, Fuzzy Navel, Snow Creek Berry.
I was at the liquor store the other day getting my wife her favorite wine, which is the Franzia boxed wine, the Zinfandel. And I happened to look to my left, and I saw a bottle of, well, what's been called Pussy Fussy, Puy Fuissé, $65.
Yeah.
I would be scared to drink it. $65.
Yeah. Well, you got to have money to spend at that amount for a single bottle.
Got to be celebrating something with somebody who knows a label. Otherwise, what the hell?
Yeah, that's not I haven't heard Puy Fuissé in quite a while. That was big back in the 70s and 80s as one of the premier wines.
Yeah, Robin Williams used to like to talk about Puy Fuissé.
All right. Well, what do you say, Rex? Shall we go ahead and get this ball rolling?
All right. And you're going to start with Dally's Invitation by Diane D.
All right. Well, before we start, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring on a caller. We have area code 786. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm sure about that. Okay, who do we have?
Introduce yourself, caller.
Oh, I went ahead and put him on hold because I'm going to bring him into the green room. So, Rex, go ahead and have you or Laurent read that, please.
All right. Dally's Invitation by Diane D. Gnarly fingers clasp the silverware while the molten fiery moat gurgles. Desert sands paint a quick beige sky. Chef Stargazer boils his main course, luring destitutes and derelicts alike to feast on the backbone of mystery. Savagely ripping apart red ligaments, his maw watered and his mind spun, salivating and jolting, he sees the fork. Of tending to a bubbling moat inside, on the saddle of a Sahara shipwreck, he heated the porcelain dinner plates, dining within the wreckage of dunes, racing through oil-spattered camels, desert waiters and waitresses served, Dali's diner unfurled, with an invitation calling all those unquenched patrons, lusting for a third plateful of artwork. And poem. That was a different look for that. All right, Laurent, what do you think?
I think she did justice to the Dolly. I mean, Dolly's pictures can generate so much in the way of imagination. Diane did a good job with this. Gnarly fingers clasped the silverware while the molten fiery moat gurgled. Desert sands paint a quick beige sky. It's a very nice interpretation of the image. And I do like the phrasing, savagely ripping apart red ligaments. His maw watered and his mind spun, salivating and jolting. He seized the fork to that ending, lusting for a third plateful of artwork. What a nice appreciation of the art.
I'll bite on that. Yes, she did. I didn't look at the picture quite before I actually started reading. And that picture is that's one I haven't come across in Dali before, so... The interpretation is kind of spot on. It kind of hits on the motif of the mind of Dali himself, because he always did draw allusions to that which he put forth on canvas and offered up his oft-described, maybe twisted thoughts to what was going on in the world, as well as his own interpretation of things. But I do like what she had to say with it. That saddle at Sahara shipwreck, he heated the porcelain dinner plates with a nice touch there. And savagely ripping apart red ligaments, his maw watered and might spun. Salivating and jolting, he seized the fork, attending to a bubbling moat inside. Ooh. That kind of offers up its suggestive notes as well. Nicely
looks
done,
like,
Diane.
Looks like your co-host is mired in an electronic undertow.
Uh-oh. Let me see. That's what she gets for just stick me in the green room for a while.
You know what you should do? You should install different colored lights, like purple and neon. You can flick them on and off and really give her a hard time.
Oh, you two. By the way, I am back. Thank you, Gene.
Oh, you better stay out of there since you're playing with fire on your end.
Yes, yes. And, yeah, our caller is, that's on hold is just listening. And I do plan on, unfortunately, I have to stay out of the green room and probably not mute myself either. I don't know what the heck is going on. I really
don't. You're
naked
to the elements.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. It's like, you know, I didn't even think about because it worked to pick you up, Lawrence. So I picked you up and it worked. So I thought, okay, well, I didn't think about it not working again. And I put myself in the green room and I was like, oh, shit, I'm stuck in
big
here.
Big mistake. It's haunted. It's haunted.
All right, so I'm guessing you both did comment on Diane's poem.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I thought, as always, Diane has wonderful imagery throughout this. I like how she brings us into Dolly's Diner. It's like the surrealism of the idea of Alice's Diner. Really cool. She really delves into the picture, the artwork, and one of my favorite parts is Chef Stargazer boils his main course, luring destitute and derelicts alike to feast on the backbone of mystery, and then of tending to a bubbling moat inside on the saddle of Sahara shipwreck, he heated the porcelain dinner plate. Dining within the wreckage of doom. Wonderful use of imagery and alliteration. A great idea the serving up of art as something to be consumed. So excellent write and very well done. All right. What do you got for us, Rex? Next, Rex?
Eat and Be Eaten by Peter Solway. And Ront, that one's for you, please.
All right. I like Peter Solway. I don't think I've read anything by him in the last few shows. Eat and Be Eaten. Salvador at his best, mustache erect. Cannibals, El Natural. Dalian realism, bed nail hitting. Eat and Be Eaten. Instructing Gala and Strong Fisherman, Net, Elastic, Tilt and Bone, Lobster on Phone, Art of Cultured Survival, Spoons of Dessert of Useless Thought, Franco with Metal, Proud Maestro of Shit, Pin It on My Catholic Foreskin, General Manner of Marinating, Such Audacious Fame, Andalusian Rule or Be Ruled, Subversive Marxist, Prison's Menu, Not to His Liking, Roast Butt of Warden, Guards, Black Pudding, Preferring Gala, Sautéed in Fisherman's Semen, Tits from Russia to Spoon with Napkin by the Green Aegean, Lake Her Long Bones Clean, Finally Alone, Sweet Oblivion, Dungeon Masturbating, Breakfast Tomorrow, Soylent Green, Movie Scene, Reality of Factory Farms of Orwell, Brutality of Mass Butchering, little lambs, adolescent chickens, pigs with machine guns, Maoris making a land claim, eat and be eaten, lacquered genius of long hook, penis of Moby Dick to roast and suck, survival's nutrition, Vermeer from Holland, almost as famous, scenes of eatable realism, eat and be eaten, the light beaming in. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent. And as always, Peter Salway has given us an extremely thought-provoking write with a lot to dig into. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
All right. Eat and be eaten, that offers up its own tone of thought to reality. Salvador Dasbas, mustache erect. Again, that note, eat or be eaten, mustache erect. There's an illusion going right up the top, and bent nail hitting also offers up that note, walking with the mustache erect and eat or be eaten. So you already know where the tone is going. Eat and be eaten, again, the sort of, I think he meant instructing Gaia and strong fishermen, net elastic, titten bone, lobster on phone. The titten bone, lobster on phone kind of hits me with a thought of a little bit of Cockney slang, but I don't know if that really is a note to that or just something that worked in the moment. Dessert of useless thought, and he offers up, because he did quite a bit with the Spanish Civil War going on back in the 30s, so he offers up Franco with metal proud maestro of shit, how that country went downhill after that because of the war. My Catholic foreskin, general marinating, such audacious fame. He's walking into a little bit surrealistic, but he's offering up quite a bit of Dali's perspective and how Dali was viewed by other people, because he was a bit odd in his makeup and how he did things. I like the thought, roast butt of water, guards black pudding. You know, there's another tone of thought that walks well with the vein that he's already running in. And then preferring Gaia, sautéed in fisherman semen, fits from Russia, the spoon with Nat King by the Green Aegean. Again, he's walking in a lot of things. The adolescent chickens, there's a note to the thought of trafficking in children. Pigs with machine guns, so he's sitting on a bit of war too. Lack of genius, a long look, penis of Moby Dick to roast and stuff. Again, it's all on the illusions that walk within a lot of Dali's pics when it comes to sexual innuendos and how he viewed the world as a whole when it came to both war, surrealism, the art, and sex.
Absolutely. And yes, definitely sexuality and war and violence were things that Dali definitely touched on in his artwork, and especially this one particular painting. So really great observations there, Rex. And Laurent, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
What I got out of this poem is almost the same that you get out of a Dali painting. So from that perspective, it's exactly what the doctor ordered. Each stanza containing an image open to interpretation or appropriately referenced, like Orwell, for instance, the reality of factory farms of Orwell, brutality of mass butchering, little lambs, adolescent chickens, pigs with machine guns, Maoris making land claims, eat and be eaten. It's almost as if everything is a fight within a fight. Any imagery that you might find in a Dali painting, it's fair game. And therefore, any little stanza that you put in with what he calls a Dalian realism, bent nail hitting, that interpretation is very frustrating. As frustrating as trying to hit a bent nail. But, you know, we do interpret. We do draw from each stanza Dali-like imagery that is very thoughtful and sets us to thinking. And Coppola and Cummins.
Absolutely. You know, I have to agree with that, that it is like each stanza is an individual Dolly painting in its presentation. I like what you had to say there. And I also, I did like how, I'm blanking out, sorry. I can't remember. But anyways, this really spoke to me on the idea of human greed and our desire for to have the most of everything, the most food, the most fame, the most land, and the idea of the violence that comes along with the appetite of greed. I really like
greed. I like it.
Thank you. And, yeah, I thought it was an excellent write with great use of surrealism. I especially like Art of Cultural Survival, Spoons for Dessert of Useless Thought, Franco with Metal, Proud Maestro of Shit, Pin It on My Catholic Foreskin, General Marinating, Such Audacious Fame. So just an excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Try the Hors d'oeuvres by Babylon. And that was yours.
All right. Ooh, looks like Katz has a delicious cup of coffee there. At least I think it's coffee. All right. Try the Hors d'oeuvres by Babbler. I arrived late. Wondered if my invitation had been an afterthought tacked on just not to be rude, or if my presence was expected. Perhaps I should have declined, slid back into comfortable seclusion, pantsless and face illuminated by blue screens, hair coiffed, lipstick applied, mascara drier than my grandmother's first date, forget-me-nots pressed between yearbook pages, donated to Goodwill, promptly ejected from recollection, a cocktail or two or three that slid down like children gifted a garden hose and a roll of garbage bags in July, set out into the hills to get skin cancer till sundown, tongue prickled at a nibble of an errant hors d'oeuvre, quickly establishing the cause for its abandonment. Unusually tangy. Did I know anyone here? Did it matter? Still alone on the sofa, watching life from someone else's butt groove. This isn't so bad, a mantra, running ad nauseum across my mental ticker tape, streaking like the paunchy frat boy during rush week, hazed and confused, legs warping themselves in an intimate embrace around the coffee table, all four knees buckling. The music? Was this music? Dueling trumpets led by an elephant and Dizzy Gillespie, worked my hips into a shimmy to the dismay of all the glasses grasped by my inanimate lover who lied, said he worked with coffee, but was more a connoisseur of feet and liqueur. The brass joined, rolling the roof back like a pull-tab sardine can, and I imagine that's how we smelled, dense, oily, aquatic, exposed a cloudless cream sky overhead, tickled with okra pollution. What time was it? Afternoon? I got here at 9, long after the sun had put itself to bed. She grumbled something about appreciation and fair shares, like I would know what it meant. I was no stockbroker, landholder, serf. That was before I met my silver-tongued barista. Another sip, another nibble. How much of reality was real? Falsehoods wrapped in flesh, gapes gaping, apes aping, gazes gazing, sockets searing in my direction. Was I all right? I was, I assured them. I had been enjoying the hors d'oeuvres and one-side conversation. especially the Hors d'oeuvres. Could I get the recipe? This isn't so bad. End poem. And why did you assign me the one poem that had the one word I cannot pronounce?
It's hors d'oeuvres. Or if you want to go the other route, the way it used to be guarded was hors d'oeuvres.
I've never, and I in part blame my mother who never pronounced it right. She purposely would always say horty whores. And I knew growing up that it wasn't horty whores, that my mother was just being funny, but I could never figure out how to actually pronounce it.
Hey, Pam.
Anyway, sorry about that. Yeah. I apologize for... What's that?
If you can say the word or, O-R, and dervish, which you can say dervish, you could say
dervish.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yep. Or d'oeuvres.
Dervish. Hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Herbs.
I give up. How about we just agree this? From now on, let's just make this our agreement. From now on, any poem that has the word horty whores, I do not read.
Okay. Draw a line in the sand. Absolutely.
But it was an amazing write by Babbler. Absolutely an amazing write. And Lauren, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, I have to admit, this had to be smiling. Absolutely from the beginning straight through to the end. Each little situation, each thought that drifted across her mind, things that stood out for me, I mean, everything did, but okay, good, lost my spot. Here we go. Did I know anyone here? They didn't matter. Still alone on the sofa, watching life from someone else's butt groove. This isn't so bad, a mantra, running ad nauseum across my mental ticker tape, streaking like the paunchy frat boy during rush week. That thought, that transient thought, someone else's butt groove, you're behind them, you're sitting, you can't see much beyond what's going on, you put a little cloud of loneliness around you, no one, and there's no end to the thoughts that go rolling through your mind as you lie to yourself, this isn't so bad, always ask for the recipe, that's a compliment, that's nice, falsehoods wrapped in flesh, gaping, apes aping, gazing, sockets searing in my direction. So I all right. It's great. Great stuff, Beth.
It really is. And you're right. It is one of those rites that really makes you smile, because it just got Babbler's signature sense of humor. So great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the back end meets the front end with that note to this isn't so bad, because it starts off with arriving late, which is always either you understand the motif and go late on purpose, but if you don't and you arrive late, it's always that note of all the eyes in the room are pressed on you in the moment, and you get that right from the beginning with the thought of uncomfortability. Wondering if my invitation had been an afterthought tacked on just not to be rude, or if my presence was expected, perhaps I should have declined. Stood back to a comfortable seclusion, pantsless and face illuminated. The pantsless kind of offers up that notion of the emperor wearing no clothes, even though you are dressed, yet you feel that naked in the moment because all eyes are pressed on you. And she rolls through that whole motif, almost humiliating thought, that idea with the butt, the watching life from someone else's butt groove was pretty good. But there was another one. Where was it? Dueling trumpets led by an elephant, Dizzy Gillespie, kind of note to not understanding the music, but still having a note to the the idea of what's going on. But there was another one. The brass joined, rolling roof back like a pool tab sardine can. And I mentioned that's how we smelled, dense, oily, aquatic. Also a note to, well, maybe we've all been here a bit too long and we're starting to mingle our own fragrances. And it hits on the idea of that moment. Maybe he wanted to be somewhere else where that emanation was the idea of the barista and him as the because obviously he's an inanimate lover. But that's a thought of him being, them being in another motif where that would be more applicable than actually sitting and going through all this. I'm no stockbroker, landholder, serf. That was before I met my silver tongue barista. And the lie comes forth again. And the falsehood wrapped in fresh, the gapes gaping, apes aping, gazes gazing. Kind of hits on that moment of monkey see, monkey do. And he's not very comfortable.
Comment there, Rex. I like this write. I like the sense of humor in it, the imagery and the metaphors. I like the whole idea of the arriving late to what appears to be a party of one. I like that at the end that it was actually quite enjoyable with the one-sided conversation. I also really liked, I was no stockbroker, landholder, serf. That was before I met my silver tongue barista. It's just a really great look at taking in your environment and realizing you're your own best company. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Savage Western Nights by Dammit Dave. You know the West had vicious days. There were some gruesome nut sights, but nothing started guns to blaze like savage Western nights. Saloons were nearly always packed with outlaws everywhere. Some folks were brutally attacked, and life was hard to bear. The cattle barons owned the towns. The farmers were dirt poor. Gunfighters wore their kills as crowns. Each fight became a war. A day of peace was rarely seen, but darkness brought a curse. The towns became a savage scene that went from bad to worse. The lawmen tried to do their jobs, but they were all too few. When cowboys morphed to nasty mobs, what could one sheriff do? The Wild Wild West was aptly named. It was a brutish sight. The towns, alas, were rarely tamed, and hell was raised each night. End poem.
Great read there. Laurent, your thoughts?
We had a poem by Dammit Dave read on the radio a few days ago, I remember. I don't remember the name, but it was very much along this genre. You have the classical Western tale, but when he takes a genre that is as rich as that one is, his stuff stands out due to perfect rhyming, wonderful flow, and an imagination that brings you from moment to moment, and a realism as well. The cattle barons owned the towns. The farmers were dirt poor. Gunfighters wore their kills as crowns. Each fight became a war. You know, these are the things back east. The people would develop the legends of the Wild West. And this fits in perfectly with that whole very entertaining, endless fount of ideas, the Wild West. Definitely barbarous.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I like that he did a different take on it. Great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
No. This is definitely a different take, and Laurent's right. There's quite a bit to pull out of the old West and how it was. You had to be on your toes, or more often than not, you ended up toes down in the dirt. And spending a little time on Boot Hill, so on Boot Hill gravesite, as that's where you went, because it was rough and ready, as Lamont said, and life was hard. It was vicious. It was cruel.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that he did this wonderful story, right, with great rhyme and flow, and that he brings us into a specific time period where things were very savage, where things, were very brutal. I really like his attention to detail. This is one of those rites that honestly just could have kept going and going, but I think he made it a just right length, not too short, not too long, but it definitely, there's so much about the Old West that's fascinating that you could easily, take and, add more to this and extend the story. But I really particularly like saloons were nearly always packed with outlaws everywhere. Some folks were brutally attacked, and life was hard to bear. The cattle barons owned the towns. The farmers were dirt poor. Gunfighters wore their kills as crowns. Each fight became a war. I like in that third stanza how he points out how there was such a difference between the rich of the town and the poor of the town. And the how sad it was that so much was destroyed and torn apart as far as the moral fiber of the society. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Drink the wine. Five million. Hello. You got to unmute first, Laurent.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you call me. I heard you asking somebody. All right, hang on. Give me just one second here. And I can finish this. Thank you for your indulgence. But you know how it is when you get caught in a comment. All right. This is... Oh, mine. He snuck up on me. This is the wrong one. I replaced this with another one, which is in the thing.
Okay, I'll go back.
Yep.
Ah, okie dokie, coming up.
You want me to put it up?
Oh, there you go. There you
go. Okay. Flesh made of drink. Were your flesh made of drink, what flask would I pour you from? Mayhap an indecent goblet, tipped gently twixt lip and tongue. Perhaps smooth and polished wood, handless in simplicity. Arbor's fruit red as blood, lover's liquid complicity. So effervescent, yet refined, you softly tickle gently. What scruples I reserve before wooing you so intently. Once more I quaff this brew, rich with woody notes of spice, tasting all the subtleties your vintage valued beyond price. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there. Laurent, I'm glad you called in to share something, and it fits really well with the wine quote. And Rex, your thoughts?
A couple. There's a bite to this being hit on two levels. You said you hit on flesh made of drink, but you also offer up the two thoughts. An iridescent goblet. Or perhaps a smooth and polished wood, handleness in simplicity, arbor's fruit red as blood, liquid complicity, lover's liquid complicity. The idea of those two thoughts, the golden chalice, so to speak, or the wooden cup, kind of hits at the offering of what would Christ have drunk out of, so to speak. I like that thought, but I don't think you walk that way needfully. It was something offered up, the sort of flesh made of drink, and the way Catholics offer up the blood, well, wine as blood, so to speak, and the wafer as flesh. You took that note and hit on the sort of not only just enjoying the wine itself, but also offering it up as the pleasure of indulging in the woman. Once more, I quaff this brew rich with new notes of spice, tasting all the subtleties, your vintage value beyond price. The idea, it could be an expensive bottle of wine that you get into, but more often it's something, the idea of the woman itself.
You found the kernel of it. How does a woman want to be wooed, you know, or how does she want to be loved physically, with simplicity, direct force, or is something a little more exotic almost? Yeah, I can go with that.
Great comment there, Rex. I really enjoyed the imagery and metaphors in this and how it can be taken as a sensual or spiritual, as Rex was saying. I really like, so effervescent yet refined, you softly tickle gently what scruples I reserve before wooing you so intently. And then the last line, tasting all the subtleties, your vintage valued beyond price. And I like how this can be, it does have that duality to it, and the idea of an appreciation of a good wine, but also the appreciation it comes across as of a good woman or a good lover. So just a wonderful write and very well done. And Lawrence, did you want to say anything about your write?
This is an ancient piece, one of the earliest I ever wrote. And it's the only one I could identify quickly as having anything to do with wine, other than a brevity that I had put up before and taken down because it was so adolescently simple, as this almost is itself.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
You've got Painter Poet Melee Menu by Eric Swenson, and you've got a cloud class there. What'd you do, drop off?
No, I don't think I can play SoundCloud. So if Gene can play it, that would be great. Shit, I feel, or if anybody's around who can play SoundCloud.
All right, then let me go get another one. And, never mind. I got one.
We can just have SoundClouds be carryovers, or if we need to read them, we can.
There you go. Distortion by Wildflowers. One yours.
All right. Then here we go. Distortion by Wilted Flowers. My mind is in shambles as my vision is distorting the world around me, which is not really reality. Reality. What even is reality? My mind is in shambles as I have seen the unseen with hands gripping onto me, unable to escape this so-called reality. Reality. Am I in reality? The world that warps with the thoughts like bullets penetrating me, waiting for me to fall into this reality. Reality. I'm in reality. Food becomes inedible as everything looks unappealing. The deformation of the plate in front of me makes me queasy, thinking this is reality. Reality. get me out of this reality? Is there a need to break free, a need for resurrection from the vast valleys of anticipating recovery? What if I just stay in this reality, an inescapable reality? Avoidance indeed. I now will not wait for those around me, but hide inside this uncomfortable, comforting place, since this is my fated reality. Reality. Yes, I'll stay in this reality. End poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, what picture did she write, did you know?
It's the same picture, Dolly's Barbara at Night.
Right. Yep. Okay. Makes sense. My mind is in shambles as my vision is distorting the world around me, which is not reality. Reality. And then she goes on to question what reality is, and that repetition of the two lines give this some good bones to flow towards the end of the world that warps with the thoughts like bullets penetrating me, waiting for me to fall into this reality, almost as if what she had experienced all her life, this reality, was not now reality. She was into a different reality where food becomes inedible and everything looks unappealing. You know, and then she asked that question, is there a need to break free? A need for some kind of a resurrection? What if I stay in this new reality? Interesting question. And she proceeds to say that she will. Her fated reality. Interesting piece. Very thoughtful, well written.
Definitely, yes. Interesting and thought-provoking. So great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, distortions is the right notation for the title. And sharp, right out of the gate, first two stanzas, my mind is in a shambles. It's already, her mind is disturbed. It's not just reality. It's what she's perceiving as reality in the moment. And she can't, the conflict in her mind is this reality or is this something my mind is giving me? And she can't make, there's a struggle, an inner struggle and a fight with that. The food becomes inedible as everything looks unappealing. The deformation of the plate in front of me makes me queasy, thinking this is reality. It's kind of that morph with once you start peeking on acid, everything kind of morphs into something else, and you question reality in the moment. And it kind of walks that way. But this, as she hits on that note with the my mind is in a shambles, that the conflict is internal. There's something going on with the mind, which is warping the view as to what's going on, and then the questioning notes of what is reality, and is this the comfortable place that I want to stay in and breathe within freely, or is there no escape?
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that, just the idea of what is reality, and it seems to delve into the arena of dealing with, mental health issues. Like, it almost seems almost like to deal with schizophrenia. At least that's how I read it. I really like the opening lines, plus food becomes inedible as everything looks unappealing. And is there a need to break free, a need for resurrection from the vast valleys of anticipating recovery? I like that idea of, is this something that I need to recover from? Is this something I want to recover from? Or should I, it almost feels like the thought of, should I embrace where my mind is at? So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got next, Rex?
Sommelier by Robert Richard. She was aged, nearly vintage. Very avocado, meaning full-bodied, medium sweet, no visible sparkling, this evening's perfect selection. We will walk the elegant Via Veneto on the way to my room, engage a street artist, watch as he pours her bold ruby essence onto canvas. Later, like a gifted sommelier, I'll hold her up to the light, expose any vulnerabilities, After screwing out her brains out, I'll drink her up. Then I'm gone, perhaps to Mont Crochet, fruity, oaky, dancing lightly on the tongue. End poem. Pam, you on mute?
No.
Damn. All right, Laurent, why don't you go ahead and comment, since we seem to be having difficulties on the other side.
I just did, in moose speak. This is quite creative, very humorous. It brings a smile to the face, and it is a perfect length. It's done with a lot of, God, I'm missing the word, the most impressive stanza, or among equals, perhaps. Later, like a gifted sommelier, I'll hold her up to the light, expose any vulnerabilities. After screwing her brains out, I'll drink her up, and I'm gone perhaps to Montrachet, fruity, oaky, dancing lightly on the tongue. You just have to look at that and smile. This is such a clever piece. Very enjoyable.
Absolutely. He offers himself up as a sommelier, but you know what? It comes more across like, hey, I'm the gigolo here. Early evening, takes out the old vintage run and offers up that note to that stand you just read, which is really good. And then, hey, time to take in a Montrachet, something fruity and oaky, dancing lightly on the tongue, something a little younger, a little, I don't know, something else, something light in the moment. But I did, that last stanza was actually really good.
Rex, and may I just say that any sommelier I've ever run across was exactly a gigolo. He had the gift of the right wine, a silver tongue, and knew where the wealthy widows went to eat. Come on now.
Oh, that was perfect. Oh, yes. Pam, are you back?
I am, yes. Thank you. yeah, I thought this was a clever and fun write, a wonderful comparison to drinking wine and making love. And, you know, I really like this all the way through, but especially the second stanza. So excellent write and well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Lessons in Spring Cleaning by Thomas B. And Laurent, that one's to you, please.
Lessons in Spring Cleaning. Love requires one to surrender. Never give up, even as the walls fall. The dreams come in cascades. The fear, tomorrow will reveal a lie. It is easy to be loving. Relish the joy that caring brings. There is a chance for the heart to sing when you greet the world with love. Share kindness and harvest smiles as you sow joy about you. Relationships are like running into cobwebs hanging from branch on a lovely walk in the woods. You wonder if you really cleaned all of it out of your hair. It lingers. You can feel it there. Sunlight slips out from behind a cloud. You find yourself chuckling at the antics of birds. Where the person across from you makes you aware of how wonderful this world is, even on a gray winter day. You surrender again. Open your doors. Let the fresh air run through the house. Life seems to demand it. End poem.
Great read, Laurent, and a wonderful write by Thomas B. And Rex, your thoughts?
Two bites of the at that coin. You look at those first two stanzas, they walk a singularity. Then you get that third one. Relationships are like running into cobwebs hanging from branch on a lovely walk in the woods. You wonder if you really cleaned all of it out of your hair. It lingers. You can feel it there. It kind of hits on that idea of the aftermath, And then that next one, Sunlight Slips Out, there's a reemergence. And then again, you walk down that last stanza, that you surrender again, open your doors, let the fresh air run through the house. Life seems to demand it. It's that commingling of once the first two have gone awry and you've still got all that stuff mingling in your mind, you need to air out the house. Otherwise, you drag all that baggage into the next one.
Great comment. And I'm going to have you take over for now, Rex. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right, Laurent, you got to read that. What'd you think?
You got handled the controls to the airplane rather abruptly there, young man. I like that. Here, fly this plane. Love requires one to surrender. But so does life. Life and love, in between, anything is possible. I love the relationships comment. Relationships are like running into cobwebs, hanging from branch on a lovely walk in the woods. It is just so absolutely true, and it's a metaphor, because you can feel it there. I've gone up into a dusty attic, and, you know, there's a couple of cobwebs, and they hang, and you try to avoid them by leaning your head to the left, and you think you have, but you feel something there all of a sudden. Then you touch your hair, and you look at your hands, and there's a bit of it, and it's in there, and you don't have a mirror. Either you leave it, and sometimes you have to surrender to just leaving it there, and then let in that air, and it brushes the cobweb out of your hair, which is what I think he says in that last stanza. You surrender again, open your doors, the fresh air runs through the house. Life seems to demand it. Well-written piece, very interesting.
Absolutely. And Pam, are you still busy with whatever? I guess so. Okay. I guess I'm going on to the next one.
Naomi's on hold, my friend.
Okay, so they're working on that one. This one's called Afterbirth by Ima Rima. Placentophagy is the name of the acts of mammals that eat their young's placenta that just came. After the childbirth, so to meet the needs of nature to enlist, perhaps to hide the birthing from, while predators that might exist. But from human placentas come some nutrients that may help ease a mother's return to sound health. This choice can then be prepped to please of recipes that are a wealth. The question asked in eating mine, should I select whites or red wine? And boom. And Laurent, I put you on that one.
Oh, you smooth devil. There is an implication here that we are descended from wine. if placentophagy is the name of the act of mammals that eat the young's placenta that just came after childbirth, well then, from human placentas, some nutrients that may help ease a mother's return to sound health. Recipes, of course, white or red wine. Very clever.
Absolutely. It kind of holds a little tongue-in-cheek flavor to the idea. But I do got to ask, might this have been something that we did in do way back in the day? Because I know later on, the placentas were often used as the feeding point when you planted a new tree in honor of your firstborn or your child that was just born. And I did know somebody way back in the day who was going to name her child placenta until someone told her what placenta actually meant. So she decided, no, that's not going to work. So,
you know, so much of early man, his beliefs were set in place by examining wild animals. And if they saw wild animals eating the afterbirth, or indeed their own cattle, or any domesticated animal that did that, because they will eat the placenta, they perhaps transferred that to themselves as well, because a lot of tribes did, you know, assign certain powers to animals, and then perhaps one of those powers for themselves even though they didn't have them to begin with.
It wouldn't surprise me. And it doesn't sound out of sort because at one time before we actually developed the mentality, we did have we were more animals than anything else. So it makes sense that that would follow along those very lines too.
I'm not sure monkeys ever did that, though, did they?
I don't know. I never actually thought to actually indulge in finding out.
And just a gorilla, and you tell me.
Pam, are you back?
She wanted to skip the placenta phage.
Well, yeah. I like that. That's funny. I guess I better find something else. Aha.
Yep, Selena says it is still eaten and it does have nutrients. I hope she doesn't speak from personal experience.
Oh, okay, still encouraged to do it. Okie dokie. Well, that does beg the thought. Sauté, that seems probably the better way of doing it.
Well, I apologize for being flip concerning something that I was completely unaware of. So if there is, truth to that and it's good, well, then God bless it. I'm all behind it.
All right, Laurent, we got The Devil's Elixir by Daniel Duhaime. And that one's for you.
Okay. The Devil's Elixir. Blood-red elixir of carbonated delight, aged for years in the dark, as if it were invented by a dark, malevolent force who conjured it into existence by black magic. Tickling the throat as you drink the vile concoction, as if tiny needles are stabbing your palate, then released to the nether regions of the stomach. All faculties fall to the wayside of reality, as if a veil were strung across the eyes, blinding it with a comma of surrealism. Spinning head that does not move, but the eyes revolve on a roller coaster until sleep releases the curse of consuming. End poem, and I do apologize for pronouncing coma over. Comma over coma. Yeah.
Not a problem. Great read, Laurent. Thank you. This does offer up the thought of alcoholism without actually calling the person alcoholic. Just hit on the idea of the devil's elixir and that consumption in the last stanza until sleep releases the curse of consuming. But it also walks into dark, malevolent force who conjured it into existence by black magic with a nice touch. And that thought of tiny needles are stabbing your palate, then released to the nether regions of the stomach. And it hits on that notion of, there's a fermentation going on there that does not warrant a thought as to what is really happening within the person itself. So, nicely done, Dan. And what about you, Laurent? What'd you think, since you got to read it?
I'm reminded of a program that I saw, a nature program, which watched animals that were consuming overripe fruit become totally drunk, and the after effects of it. The next morning, I remember a baboon holding his head in both hands, a very human expression of misery and pain on his face. And when you're in that moment, it is indeed the devil's elixir. And if you don't understand why it affects you the way it does, then it is indeed black magic. I like that whole thing.
Yeah, because we got the cedar waxwings up here that drink that eat the ripened berries and are get drunk as shit on the berries, and they kind of fly oddly, so to speak.
Yeah. No, he does a good job of taking the physical sensations, which are actually quite pleasant. And without describing them inaccurately, manages to put across the dark side of drinking the wine. Very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. Oh, somebody's back, I think.
I am back, and unfortunately, I've done what I can, which is I have text messaged both Jean and Victoria, and I'm not getting a response, which is fine because, you know, obviously we all need our sleep at some point. So I apologize to Naomi and to anybody else who calls in. I am unable to pick you up. So unless my message gets to one of them, I can't pick anybody up for the rest of the night. So we'll save your right for next week if you don't get picked up shortly. And I do apologize for that, but for some reason I am just having technical problems with the studio, and I apologize for that. But I am back and ready to focus on the remainder of the show and the poetry. Thank you very much, Rex and Lawrence.
We've been having fun in your absence.
Yeah.
We got into placenta phage.
When the cat's away, the mice will play.
Placenta phage, yes. Ah, she missed it.
All right. And that one's yours.
All right. Culinary Oasis by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Vivid, bright blue skies, golden spilling sands of time, rewinds, spins backwards, melting silver spoons, dipping in crimson lagoon, sipping up madness, edible lush grapes, crushed fine dark cherry wine, bottled up bubbly, twirling forked tongues, chameleons romancing, lash out biting sweet. Eyes rolling back deep, titillating enchantment, entwined, pierced by nails, whipped cream, fluffy clouds, cascading clear teardrop rain, shimmering rainbows, watermelon lust, pineapple swings, coconuts, tiki coladas, luxurious sweet, tropical Polynesian, lusciously cherry, volcanoes erupt, hot cinnamon lava flows, consuming their souls. End poem. Wow, as always, I tell you, there's something about Betty's poetry that makes me want to eat fruit and have sex at the same time. It's like, damn. And...
you know, you can order up a consort for the evening, and his body is painted in chocolate paint.
I like it. It sounds good to me. But, yeah, as always, she just has such wonderful, sensual, and delicious imagery with, of course, like a touch of darkness to it. You know, I really like how she brings in the end line of consuming their souls, because it kind of feels like the whole idea of you know, like the mythological story of, like, if you go to a place and you eat, like the underworld, you go, like, in Greek mythology, you go to the underworld and you eat something there, you're stuck there. And so that's what it kind of feels like. But at first it feels like, you know, it's all fun, you know, everybody's just, you know, indulging and having fun. But, you know, then you get to that end line, and then you start to look back and you see twirling forked tongues, chameleons romancing, lash out biting sweet. And you just realize it's that idea of being caught up in the temptations and not even realizing that you're in the underworld. Wonderful imagery, great 575 lines, and very well done. So excellent write. And Laurent, your thoughts?
You said that this stimulated you to have sex and eat at the same time. And as I was listening to the read, my stomach actually rumbled, and I felt hunger, because the words are put together in a delicious fashion. How can you resist edible lush grapes, crushed fine dark cherry wine, bottled up bubbly, and whipped cream, fluffy clouds, cascading clear teardrop rain, shimmering rainbows, and on top of that, it is sensual in the way that it's written and the images that concoct. It's a very nice piece.
It really is. Absolutely. Great comment. And your thoughts, Rex?
I'm walking away, Laurent, because that edible lush grapes is the hinter, but rolling down, she hits the whipped cream fluffy clouds. Yes. Then again, watermelon lust, pineapple swings, coconuts, tiki colada. There's definitely influence on that. Sweet tropical Polynesian, lusciously cherry, another dip in that angle. And then that final stanza, volcanoes erupt, hot cinnamon lava flows, consuming their souls. It is all about the indulgence of, let's see, how would you want to do this? A little bit of filleting and some cunning lingual language.
Oh, very clever.
I like it.
That was fucking awesome.
I've had that sitting in my mind for years,
yep.
And I haven't used it in anything yet. Cunning lingual is a nice touch to something because it gives you the image without actually offering it up literally. Or does
so
no. Anyway.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
Let me see if I actually grabbed it. Yes, I did. And this one, Sad Night That Goes On Everywhere by Chemi. Not too long. Laurent?
I'm sorry, I was coughing. Did you ask me? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sad night that goes on everywhere. Lack of response in a dark alley as the turned off lamp lines converge. Part of your diamond necklace falls. You bend to pick it up, and he attacks you from behind. You scream, but you are alone with him. You are in a deserted town. How will you survive? You ask yourself. There's only one way. Pretend that you initiated the whole thing. Make him believe he fell into your trap, that you wanted him. But then you know the police won't help you. But are tears more important than blood, than the slitting of a throat, or smashing skull to bits on a wall? Someday, son, where are you? End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it definitely walks into a different scene. I mean, he offers up the dark alley, lamp lights converge, diamond necklace stores, you've been to pick it up. Already he set the scene, the motif, and that thought of being attacked, and the idea of this being a place where the police won't help you, but our tears more important than blood, than the splitting of the throat, the smashing skull, the bits on a wall. And I like that last line, someday, son, where are you? It's kind of that motif of the that one gets of offering up where's the bright side of things or where's the light in the moment.
I like that thought. I like that. Very cool. And your thoughts, Laurent?
It's a scene from a movie. Not sure it's real life. If you're wearing diamond necklace, what are you doing in a dark alley? But it is definitely that movie scene that is so powerful. And then, of course, how would you survive? It is good advice. Don't resist your attacker. Let him, I guess, do what he will, provided you're not fighting for your life. But then to make him believe that he wants you, that you want him, is a far stretch. But again, it's a good movie scene. It asks the question, are tears more important than blood and the slitting of a throat? And of course, looking for a little daylight at the impressive piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And, really intriguing, right? And, and what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Emperor Who Swirls His Wine by Wilted Flowers. The emperor sits on his throne, swirling his wine cup as he gazes towards the pleading girl. On her knees, in ragged clothes, with light brown hair and messy French braids, and eyes as blue as the morning sky. No tears were shed as the girl explained, "Please, save my family. I'll do it anyway." The emperor controlled the expression on his face. As per usual, he would send them away, but she looked recognizable. He controlled his people. He made the decisions. But why is he influenced by her words? Familiar. She looked familiar. The emperor knew each penny spent by each citizen in his country. He knew the jobs they have taken, the taxes they have not been paid. She's in debt and begs for forgiveness, since she has no money for it to pay. Seeming unamused, the emperor sips his red wine and places his cup to the side. He grips the handle of his sword as he gets up and walks down the stairs towards the girl and lifts her head. The sword was pulled from his waist, and he proclaimed, "Be my bride. I'll compensate for the debt you receive and provide you with what you need." Shocked by the answer, all the girl did was nod, curtsy, and the knights took her away. A scoff comes his way as he remembered the previous day when this poor girl visited his abandoned castle where his parents locked him away. The girl would give him sweets day upon day. Love. His first love. He could not control his feelings of love. Scratching his head in his own disbelief, he walks back to his throne, picks up his half-filled wine glass, and closes his eyes, only to open them and look over to see the girl by his side, drinking red wine while observing the peasants pleading for forgiveness, like she did many moons ago. "What's wrong?" she asks in concern. "Nothing," he says as he smiles and swirls his red wine. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And your thoughts, Warren?
The story helped me from beginning to end. I've got to say I really enjoyed it. The wine has a strange influence. The emperor himself sits, grips the handle of his sword because he can't figure out why he did what he did. He could not contain his feelings of love. He scratched his own head in disbelief, picking up the half-filled wine glass, closing his eyes, of course, and then it transports us to the present when she is his queen, one assumes, and she sits at his side, and he's remembering, and he smiles, and she expresses her concern, and he just relaxes and swirls his red wine. The red wine figures all the way through it. The story is entertaining. I got to say, I enjoyed the poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. And before I have you comment, Rex, I would like to welcome Naomi to the show. Welcome, Naomi. Glad you can be here.
Oh, hello.
Naomi.
Yeah, and thank you to Victoria.
I'm so sorry if she got up in the middle of the night.
Honest to goodness, I doubt my text message woke her up, so chances are she was awake anyways. So, yeah. Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I like the story for what it was. It kind of hits on the note of an emperor who's actually a little bit wise, maybe overcompensates a bit, but something niggles at the back of his mind, and that memory doesn't come to full bear until he kind of sits back and after letting the girl be taken away, then he opens his eyes to find her sitting by his side. So he's made another wise decision. He's married that first love, and now the idea is... she asked him what's wrong, and he says nothing as he smiles as well as his red wine. Now, does he offer up that same consistency to the rest of those that come before him, or is he but a shallow emperor with a memory that he holds to himself?
I like that. I like that. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know me, it's the ending that I really sparked a thought in me. You know, the girl sitting there by his side, drinking wine, you know, while observing the peasants that are pleading for forgiveness, like she used to do, and, you know, asks what's wrong, and the emperor says, well, nothing, and he smiles, swirls his red wine. So, you know, gives like the thought that, you know, once you raise up, how much do you really consider the people that are beneath you? So I found it very captivating, the whole rite. Very well done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really liked this rite. I liked that it was a great story rite. And, you know, just a great story rite. Kind of, it made me think of a fairy tale, but it also kind of, it made me think of the story of Esther from the Bible. And how, you know, how she became queen. And then how her becoming queen, by her becoming queen, she was able to help her people. And so it very much had that kind of, put that kind of thought in my head. So excellent rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Barbarous Dinner by Kay Hartless, and that one's yours.
All right. Barbarous Dinner by Kay Hartless. Nights in the city, three-course debauchery, partake of polished flesh with Dahmer-like dignity. Sunset fizzles in iced aperitif, sneak a supple slice dipped in flesh-colored cheese. Below scanty light strings, the skyscrapers are nude, ebony phalluses begging to be consumed. Ripped stocking street lights draped over back doors shout, squeeze and stab until she's sore. Nights in the city, compact lake reflections, hairspray halogens, Botox injections, and propped up flesh plunge into a main course, steam and stroke her doughy chest, a forkful of face, tug of braided hair, a pinch of guilt covered up with despair. Nights in the city, the guts, the glimmer, the moist nitty-gritty, indulgent end to a barbarous night or a barbarous dinner and poem. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yes. Nights in the city, compact lake and reflections, hairspray, halogens, Botox injections, popped up flesh, plunge into a main course, steam and stroke, her dotty chest. You know, that collection of stuff is just like, you know, a collection of all the, well, the unnecessary galore, you know, or stuff that women do to themselves, I guess, you know, or, you know, just the amount of stuff that piles up, that feeling of just eating down a dinner just to be keep your charm and keep your youth. So bravo, wonderful right here.
Absolutely, great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it's noirish in nature. I like that way she polished this out. The thing with Dama-like dignity. There's heavy indulgence there, right there with that. And the thought that you can actually indulge in Dama-like dignity, eating of flesh, so to speak. But although you could walk this with the thought of normal hookers, that doesn't walk this way. That second last stanza kind of hits it. No, a fork of lace, a fork full of face, tug of braided hair, a pinch of guilt covered up with despair. This is someone who's gone out of their way, especially with the thought of the hairspray, halogens, Botox injections, and propped up flesh. This is someone who's still in need, but's gone out of a way to make herself a bit more than what she is age-wise. And that tinge of guilt kind of hits of on the notation of either knocking out in the city because she's not getting what's at home, or she feels a little old and is trying to gain back some of that youth, because that last stanza hits nights in the city, the guts like the glimmer, the moist nitty-gritty indulgent end to a barbarous dinner. So it kind of hints at the idea of going out for that which she needs, as opposed to actually selling it.
I like that. Cool observation. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is like a bit of film. I'm reminded of films, usually at a tense moment, an adventure film perhaps, which occurs in a city, and it's filmed in a handheld fashion, and the lights are flashing by you, the bodies are moving past you, cars are moving from every angle, and it's quick cut, quick cut, quick cut. Everything hits you all at once, and I can remember the first time I ever visited New York City and experienced it at night. Images coming at you from every moment, the nights in the city, the restaurants that you passed as people were eating, the tall skyscrapers, which are obvious phallic symbols, and then she puts a sexual twist on it, begging to be consumed, ripped stocking streetlights draped over back doors, shout, squeeze and stab until she's sore. And here come the imagery, the reflections, the nights in the city with the people with their hairspray halogens and Botox injections, and the prostitutes with the propped up flesh, and again, steam and stroke or dirty chest. It's all consumption of everything that is shown, the guts, the glimmer, the most nitty-gritty, indulgent end to a barber's dinner, such a sexual twist she puts on all the imagery in her last pieces. Ooh, good Lord.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And great comments, everyone. What do we have next, Rex?
Of Wine and Men by Naomi.
Well, I know this doesn't address the prompt directly, but there's wine in there and there's love. So, Of Wine and Men. I taste my men as a savored wine. So much truth lies hidden within each flavor left lingering upon my palate. See, he's a Pinot Gris, refreshing and crisp, a delicate citrus mix with white floral notes, light, easy drinking, just perfect to enjoy on a hot summer's noon. Now him, a Muscadet. More bruised than oxidized, an apple-y character, but relatively bitter, yes, still so green, could do with some more time to mature. Oh, an Albarino from Spain. He produced such a wonderful, full, aromatic experience, his bouquet rich and fruity, so I knew I could expect a refreshing, tasty adventure. And my Sauvignon Blanc, aggressively citrus-driven, grapefruit, pith, exotic fruits, honeydew, kiwi, grassy mint, the savory green pepper hints just left my lips salivating in anticipation of another sip. But most of all, I'll toast to my full-bodied Cabernet Sauvignon. Bold tannins, long, persistent finish, black cherry, black currant, spices, intense smokiness of cedar and oak. Silky smoothness leaves the mouth watering, begging for more arousal. Just the one to swirl and savor in front of a blazing fireplace on cold evenings and keep you all warm and cozy through those long wintry nights. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Naomi. I'm glad you called in to share this with us. It's one of those that's definitely worth hearing again. I love how you have the extended metaphors of comparing men to wine. And I thought this was a delightful and creative write on the joy of tasting wine and men. So very well done. And Rex, your thoughts.
Okay, I see this as a number of women out on the town, lunch, so to speak, and they're all discussing men. And Naomi, this is your version of that conversational piece, and you're running it along the lines of wine. I thought that was pretty cool, offering up the Pinot Grigio for a hot summer's morn, that brought to the Muscadet a little time to mature because he's a bit too young or a bit youthful, and the refreshing, tasty adventure from the Albarino offers up that note to rich and fruity bouquet. But the back end is where you take them to those long, cold winter evenings where you want to actually indulge in the permanency and the flavor that gets drawn out of a full-bodied Cabernet. And that comes, bold tannins, long persistent finish, black cherry, black currant spices, intense smokiness of cedar and oak. You hit all the right notes with that, but you also run in that illusion. It's almost a little tongue-in-cheek, and it's kind of where you get all these ladies together, and you think they're talking about wine, but they're actually indulging in their favorite pastime. Hey, this is what we do when we can.
Awesome comment there, Rex.
And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I got to totally disagree with old Rex on this one. This is one woman carefully evaluating each kind of wine, willing to spend the time with each to discover what there is to find and enjoy, and she does plumb the depth of each. This was just a fine write and fun to read. Personifying wine as men was genius in the writing of it. The sensations, the images, the tones and tendencies of each delivered with a lip-smacking relish. Naomi has no intention of sharing any of that with chatty women who don't deserve it.
Well, that's fun.
I do love my man and wine.
that was my other thought to this, is being that sizing up all the men around it, which one's going to be the best, and it's kind of hitting off, no, this one for this one for this, and this one for this. But I thought the other angle held a little playful tone because of the voice that was wove into it. But you're right, it was about singularity.
Great comments. And what do we have next, Rex?
Fruit of the Vine by Randy G, and that one's for Laurent. This one's for you, Laurent.
Sorry, I was on and I turned myself off. Now I'm back on again. That damn wine, isn't it? Wine, the fermented life's blood of the elite, who order their favorite vintage from a suite, pampered and comfortable in a 5-star hotel, just sitting on a balcony, talking on their cell. This is their norm, even at their favorite cafe, a nightcap topping off an evening at the ballet, when at home, a choice from their wine grotto, perhaps a white Chardonnay or a red Bordeaux. They invest a lot of time and money buying wine and sharing with others as they chat and dine, a valuable must to maintain their status quo, prime accessory for those rolling in the dough. Traveling wine country and comparing grapes while tasting the wine, a connoisseur's escape in hopes of finding a vintage, a hidden treasure they can procure to hoard away with pleasure. On the other hand, and to the opposite extreme, so different for those of us without their means, great wine, Dutch has a price that ain't too steep. Our only requirement for wine is that it's cheap. And poem.
A great read, Lauren, and a wonderful write by Randy. And Naomi, your thoughts?
I really got a kick out of that cheap. And you know, because I drink a lot of wine. And you don't have to pay a fortune to get good wine. There's great wines out there with very affordable prices. And, you know, you just have to, you know, go often, you know, and check them out and taste them. And, you know, that's what I have to say. You know, you don't have to pay a fortune to get good tasting wine. And, this is really well written. I love the just the images she creates there at the beginning with the women sitting around on the balcony with their cells, sipping their wine. It's just so relatable to today and this modern age. Very well written indeed. Great, right, Randy.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
The Finger Lakes region of New York, where I live, is great wine country. And there's vineyards everywhere, and there are wine tours everywhere. And I have found, much to my surprise, that most of them were not wine connoisseurs, except to the extent that they were retired women who would go on a wine tour under the guise of, discovering wines, discovering the land, discovering nature, the whole package. When in reality, all they wanted to do was drink, and this was a good excuse. And they smiled their secret smile when they told their husbands they were going on a wine tour, and the husbands would smile in private because they knew damn well what was going on. But it was a good excuse. And I'm not saying the poem has that flavor in it, but it can, because the idle rich are not necessarily those people who are on these wine tours. So the opposite is true, of course, in this poem, which I really enjoyed, because it triggered all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's funny. He opens up that first line, wine, the fermented lifeblood of the elite. It wasn't always that way. Wine was something back in the day that everybody drank because the water quality was so poor. Because you go through the process of making the wine and making beer, it was a better way of drinking rather than actually drinking the poison of what comes out of the water that surrounds you. So it didn't used to be that way. It has morphed into that because of how the wineries have developed into such a clique of you got to go here for this particular and this 1959 you need to have. There's this 1941, this 65. They all put out a variety of good wine in certain years that gets really expensive, and that's what he hits on with most of this. But the back end is kind of that funny note. Hey, you know what? We can still enjoy wine, but it's got to be a little bit on the cheaper side. And as Naomi says, there are plenty of wines out there that don't break the bank. You can even go to plenty of places where you get wine flights. You get
May I absolutely agree with you? When I was 9 years old living in Bordeaux, My grandmother would send me to the corner to fill a pitcher of wine. I would walk in and he'd give her a last name, Martin, and he would take it and pump it, literally like a water pump that you would see in a Western, you know, like a pump from a well. And he would pump it from this vast cask and fill it right up, and then in with the stopper, and he'd give it to me, and I'd walk home with it very heavy, very careful, because it was a large, large glass jar. But it cost almost nothing. And you're right. Everybody could drink it. It was called a Gros Rouge, or Big Red, you know, a Bordeaux red wine.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Did
I know
sneak
we all
while
drink here in Quebec. I know we all drink here in Quebec. We're a bunch of drunkards here. We don't have to be the only dealer.
Well, I think I think when it comes to wine, you're looking at, and you go to a place, you get those wine flights. You get five or six little glasses, 2 ounces a piece, for you to taste the wine. They tell you which one it is, and then you can go out and see if you can find it. Those are great little opportunities as well.
Yeah, five each vineyard. Jesus, you'll have 25 by the time the tour is over and you're tipsy.
Absolutely.
Great comment, Rex. All right, what do you got for us next?
Let's see. It's called Satin's Dresser. Satan's Dresser by Scott Sharp. Satan's Dresser. What bleeds is a knight's tongue nailed to a dresser, where two mismatched stocks speak in tongues about the barbarous knights. Salivating, Salvador cooks up body parts, whisked, scalloped, and served in the deserted desert dunes of morality. Kidneys sautéed to perfect tenderness, the only crunch being a stone yet to pass, the only thing yet to in this land of death. Prayers thrown up to the sky like the vomit of ill-gotten gains falls upon deaf, severed, slow-cooked ears. A meal for the damned if I do, damned if I don't. Who'll don my socks in hell or my soul here on earth? Does it matter? I have come to an end of this thread. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and an excellent write by Scott Sharp. I really like his creativity with the imagery and metaphors. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
It's just humorous cannibalism. It's wonderful. From salivating, Salvatore cooks up body parts, whisked, scalloped, and served in the deserted desert dunes of morality. It's a complete spin, the poet's spin, on the image that we've all seen tonight. I think those elements are in there. I had to chuckle. I'm sorry. I should have been on mute when you read with great relish, the only crunch being a stone yet to pass. By the way, that was a great read, Rex. This is very, very clever, very interesting, and very inventive. I absolutely enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, it's really a witty, witty, clever write here. You know, with a bit and with a bite of sarcasm, I think, you know, in a meal for the damned, damned if I do, damned if I don't. Prayers, with the prayers thrown up to the sky like the vomit of ill-gotten gains fall upon deaf, severed, slow-cooked ears. You know, and then he finishes out with, who'll darn my socks in hell, or my soul here on earth? Does it matter? I've come to the end of this thread. That's so, so witty. Such that ending. Just an absolute amazing, very creative write by Scott here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I really also liked that part where it says, who'll darn my socks in hell or my soul here on earth? Does it matter? I have come to an end of this thread. So that was definitely a clever part. So great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I too think there was a bit of sarcasm as well as dark humor in this two mismatched socks speaking tongues about the barbarous night. That offers up a nice note. And so does the Salvador cooks up body parts with scallops and served in the deserted desert dunes of morality. Nice touch. It kind of hits on, there's almost the Sodom and Gomorrah fame to this thing. The kidneys, I did that stone yet to pass, I thought was quite the touch in that moment, because you think about eating the kidneys and all of a sudden you get the crunch. Yeah, that one didn't quite pass. Now you get it. So, and the next one down, the thoughts of a falls upon death, severed, slow-cooked ears. Again, that note to people see what's going on, understand what's going on. Yes, all the shit falls on deaf ears. So it's either you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Hey, it kind of offers up that note of, well, it doesn't really matter because we're all going to hell.
Absolutely. Well said there. Great observations. And what do we have next, Rex?
All right. Beautiful Life by Stephen T. Wellman. And Naomi, for you, please. But you got to unmute
Are
first.
Are you on mute, Naomi?
Oh, my gracious, I was reading along. My Beautiful Life. Cold October rains run through my veins, soft sienna seasons, deep copper canyons dug in my chest, lined with golden aspen, my soul on fire. Flames flicker and flutter, burning pages purged, scarlet sparks singed, melt hairs on my arms. I am pain perfecting, I'm pain reflecting all my frostbitten flaws. I am the luminescent leaf of free-falling watercolor, painting whimsical winds, spiraling direction divine, looking for a soft landing where to rust I must return, a cinnamon crusty crunch, breaking into pieces as hard heels crush me. Bury my empire of dirt. Return me to the clay ground. Cover me, smother me, until spring rains runs through my veins. I am the bud. I am a budding leaf, a blooming belief. Life is beautiful. End poem.
Great read, Naomi, and what a wonderful write by Stephen Wellman. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the beautiful life reflected here is the earth itself offering up its tone. Cold October rains run through my veins, the soft sienna seasons, deep copper canyons dug in my chest, lined with golden ashen, my soul is on fire. And he continues that thought, I am pain perfecting, I am pain reflecting all my frostbitten floors. And then again, keeps going, I am a luminescent leaf, a free-falling watercolor. Everything that you can envision of what the earth is and what you can see literally in the moment from the season to season is reflected here. And then that last stanza, cover me, smother me until rain springs run through my veins. I am a budding leaf, a blooming belief. Life is beautiful.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I really believe the entire poem is a personification of the leaf. The cold October rains run through my...
Uh-oh. Did we just lose Laurent?
It changes color. My soul on fire. The leaf is the personification, which has, in this poem, the soul. Flames flicker and flutter, burning pages purged. Those are all the leaves changing to their end points, the brilliant colors, as if hairs were melting on my arms. Again, the personification of the leaf almost as a person. I am pain reflecting all my frostbitten flaws through the frostbite that the leaves change their color, and then the leaf introduces itself. After giving you all those sensations, I am the luminescent leaf, a free-flowing watercolor that all ties back into the descriptions in the earlier stanzas, and it truly is a cinnamon crusty crunch. When you step into leaves, that's the perfect way to describe it. This is a gorgeous piece.
Absolutely. Well said there. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of this. Your thoughts?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly with Laura's interpretation. You know, you see the leaf as the person here, you know, as the cold October rains run through my veins. You see the seasons pass by, you know, the what happens to the leaf as life, you know, like the cycle of life goes around and round from season to season. And, you know, life, and, you know, he wants to just lay there till spring comes back. He comes back to life again and again. Life is beautiful. I love that ending. So just an amazing write here. Stunning write by Stephen.
Yes. Yeah, I like how there is that sense of hope that comes through at the end. You know, I thought it was a wonderful write, great imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And this has been a great show tonight, despite some little bumps in the road. Thank you, Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you, Lawrence and Naomi, for calling in. Jean and Victoria for helping out in the background. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Saturday 12:30 a.m. Part Sinner, Part Saint with Aphasiana and Babbler. Saturday 10 p.m. We have Exploring a Crisis with Captain B2 and Daniel DeShino. And Rex, I know you need some rights for your contest for Sunday, so what do you have going on?
Vibing on some Jeff Beck. Everything from the early 60s straight on through to Johnny Depp.
Did you see where
nice.
Crosby died? Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
No, Jeff Beck.
I know, but I'm asking you, did you see that Crosby of Crosby, Stills, and Nash just died?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Yeah.
Damn. That's another one, because Robbie
right.
Bachman from BTO just died last week, too.
That's the three. They all happen in threes.
I got my next 2 weeks are going on their own wave.
You can say goodbye to the 60s. They're all dropping.
Yes, they are. Unfortunately.
Well, we have their music. We have their videos, at least.
Yes,
that's
we
something
do.
That, the videos are a wonderful thing. They will live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so does the music.
Yeah,
what was it? I just came across a quote. What was it? Ars longa vita brevis. Art is long, life is short. Literal meaning.
Yep.
And it hits on the idea of the plays may come along and be short-lived, but their art lasts forever.
Right. Good night, guys. Enjoyed the show.
All right,
good
guys.
Night, everybody.